The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker tov, shavua tov. Yeah, I'm a very happy football fan today. Thank you, Howard. Dina sounds like she might be shocked to hear that you're not really a football fan, Howard.
I know you kind of.
He is. I am kind of. Avid football fan.
Well, you are. There we go. Now your mic is
As
on.
As I walked in, he was practicing his disky. I was checking it out.
Well, I've played You Never Walk Alone twice so far this morning.
Well, as you guys probably know, Tottenham is a team that's followed by a lot of Jews, has been for many years, especially in England. And just a little snippet, which I found quite amusing. The Champions League final on Saturday night started during Shabbat in England. And this created a lot of dilemma for people who wanted to watch the game. So there was actually a group of Tottenham supporters, and indeed some Liverpool ones as well, who were Jewish in England. And they decided to come to Israel for the weekend. They came here, they spent Shabbat here. Shabbat went out very perfectly and calmly. And then they managed to watch the game in a very kosher way, as opposed to having been in England when the game started on Shabbat. So I found that quite amusing.
Oh, very clever. Yeah, but we were saying, you know, we could, because it's winter here, we could watch the game, you know, way hours after Shabbat ended versus if you were actually
and
in Spain, you couldn't. So, yeah, it was crazy. All right, yesterday, Anthony, was Yom Yerushalayim, 52 years since the reunification of the city of Jerusalem after the Six-Day War. What celebrations were held to mark the occasion?
Well, there were numerous celebrations, and of course, most of them focused in the city of Jerusalem itself. But indeed, there were celebrations across Israel, as is the tradition on Yom Yerushalayim. It's a significant moment in the calendar, and certainly from an halachic point of view, at any way, they see fit to add Hallel to the Tfilot on Yom Yerushalayim. So I think that goes a long way towards trying to show how important a day Yom Yerushalayim really is, and how important the reunification of the city of Jerusalem has been, not only for the state of Israel, but indeed for the Jewish people in general. And maybe that is the reason why there is so much conflict that surrounds the issue of the unified city of Jerusalem. But, you know, I just want to mention one or two very small things which I think are important for people to understand, that never before in Jerusalem's history have the holy sites of Jerusalem been open to all the religions, without exception. And just in order to show how accurate a statement that is, 240,000 people prayed on the Temple Mount on Friday, being the last Friday of Ramadan, last Friday on the Temple Mount. 240,000 Muslims were allowed to pray there. Now, it's ironic to me that that's the situation, whereas on Yom Yerushalayim, when a small group of Jews goes up onto the Temple Mount, having been granted permission to do so, and wanted to conduct a prayer service on the Temple Mount, then of course they were subject to abuse and all kinds of attacks. Things were being thrown at them. So there were certainly incidents on the Temple Mount yesterday as Jews were trying to ascend the Temple Mount in order to express joy over the fact that Jews, as well as Muslims, as well as Christians, as well as people who are non-believers, have access to all of the holy sites in Jerusalem. And, you know, it's ironic in a sense, and I know that we've had this discussion before, it's ironic that, you know, out of all the people who have any restrictions placed upon them in the city of Jerusalem, it's actually the Jews who are prevented from praying on an ordinary day on the Temple Mount. So, you know, I think that Yom Yerushalayim is certainly a day to celebrate. It was certainly a momentous occasion in 1967 when unexpectedly the Israeli army had the opportunity not only to win over the Golan Heights and the Sinai and Gaza and other parts of Israel, but most importantly, the east side of the city of Jerusalem, and of course with it, the Temple Mount, and of course the Kotel, which is the last standing remnant of the Second Temple, and indeed has bits of the First Temple embedded in the wall as well. You know, I think that overall, the celebrations of Yom Yerushalayim yesterday, even though it's not an official holiday, but certainly a lot of celebrations all around Israel, were certainly justified. And you know, I hope that others from around the world also joined in doing so. It was, I don't know if it was coincidental, if it was planned like that, But in New York, they actually had the Celebrate Israel Parade, which is an annual parade that they have on Fifth Avenue in New York. And, of course, it happened yesterday on Yom Yerushalayim. So I think that that was a very pertinent and a good way, just positive way to celebrate the reunification of the city of Jerusalem.
Absolutely incredible indeed. Israel retaliated against Syrian rockets that was fired into the Golan Heights on Saturday evening. What was this retaliation attack?
Well, I mean, the rockets actually fell in the Golan Heights, and you know there was a lot of comment about the nature of these rockets, because on this occasion it didn't really seem to be rockets that kind of inadvertently happened to just cross the border while there was a bit of fighting going on in southern Syria, and you know, a missile that was fired here landed up going across the border and it was unintentional. That doesn't seem to have been the case at all. And in fact, on the contrary, it seems as if though these missiles were purposely fired towards Israel. One, we understand, actually landed in Syrian territory. The second did cross over the border into Israel, falling in the Hermon area. Fortunately, there were no injuries, no damage was caused, but of course it did cause a lot of consternation, a lot of concern about the possibility of other attacks coming from Syria in a more determined fashion and perhaps more serious. And Israel lost no time at all in retaliating against, first of all, against the missiles themselves that were fired, and there were retaliation attacks that were carried out. The Israeli Air Force struck a number of Syrian military positions in southwestern Damascus and Quneitra. We understand indeed that some people were even killed in the course of these attacks, members of the Syrian armed forces, and potentially some what were labeled as foreign fighters, which we kind of interpret to mean either from Hezbollah, from Iran, and a lot of damage was done in the process. But what's quite interesting is that Israel then decided last night to continue that retaliation and carried out this attack against the T4 airbase in Syria, which has been in the news on more than one occasion before and has been subject to Israeli attacks previously. This is an airbase that's kind of further towards the Iraqi border, and there is intelligence to suggest that Iran has decided to move some of its assets and some of its people away from the southern Syria area, which is considered to be more exposed to Israeli attacks, and they're moving it more towards the T4 airbase, which is along the Iraqi border, slightly away from Israel's prying eyes and Israel's artillery and potentially even Israel's aircraft. So there has been apparently quite a lot of activity going on at the T4 airbase, and in fact there was even a report of an Iranian plane that had landed there yesterday. And ironically, immediately after that Iranian plane had landed during the course of the day, Israel carried out this attack last night into the T4 airbase. We understand that 5 Syrians, including a soldier in the Syrian army, were actually killed. The Syrians always talk about the anti-aircraft fire that they direct against these missiles that Israel fires, and also anti-aircraft fire that's directed against Israeli aircraft. So far, none of those have really been successful in preventing Israel from carrying out its mission. In other words, no Israeli aircraft have been hit by the anti-aircraft fire. There may well have been cases when missiles that were fired by Israel have been intercepted, although it's not exactly clear because the reports that we receive about such interceptions are very unreliable, or at least come from unreliable sources that we have to be very circumspect about believing what they're telling us. But be that as it may, Israel is obviously keeping a very careful watch on things. Things on the Syrian border certainly have escalated a little bit since those missiles were fired towards Israel on Saturday night and since these retaliation attacks have been carried out. But in the meantime, at least, Israel is not considering the situation on that Syrian border to be any more serious than it was last week. And certainly there are no new instructions for citizens living in that area about how they should go about their daily lives. In other words, it's business as usual. And the expectation by the Israeli security service is that the Assyrians are not expected necessarily to retaliate in any meaningful way, at least at this time.
Absolutely incredible how this just continues and continues. Another thing that keeps continuing, and this is, I found this very perplexing, is that Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday fired Ayelet Shaked and Naftali Bennett from their ministerial positions in the government. What prompted this action?
Well, if we kind of cast our minds back, we will remember that Ayelet Shaked and Naftali Bennett are currently no longer members of the Knesset, and they are serving in these government positions by virtue of the fact that the last government from the election before the last election is still in place, given that a new government has not been formed yet. And so we had this question, I think, last week about what happens in the meantime. Mm. Well, in the meantime, the old government continues to function as it was, and that included Naftali Bennett as Minister of Education and Ayelet Shaked as Minister of Justice. Now, of course, they represent a party that has no representation in the Knesset at the moment. And in fact, the new leader of Habayit HaYodiv, which Bennett and Shaked actually left, was in the process of formulating a letter to the Prime Minister saying, as a very minimum, he should reallocate those posts to two people who are still in the Bayit HaYehudi rather than to two people who have now left the Bayit HaYehudi to form a new party of their own. But of course, Netanyahu had ideas of his own now that we're going into another round of elections, which is set only for September. And until then, the old government continues to function as was. So effectively, this kind of just extends the term of this current government for another 4 to 6 months. And this government is in danger of becoming Israel's longest ever serving government, just because of the technicality of the fact that the election has to be repeated, and so the government continues to be in office. But Netanyahu's idea in terms of firing Shaked and Bennett is really to try somehow to bolster his own ranks within the Likud. And the idea is that he's going to apparently appoint two Likud members who are much closer to the Prime Minister now than Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked. He's going to appoint the two of them to take over these ministerial roles, even though it's in a temporary capacity, at least until the next government is formed, whenever that will be. And of course, in the knowledge that these ministers really have no meaningful power to formulate policy. This is a typical lame duck role where you're kind of just filling the seat and you're having to answer questions that might be asked of you in terms of day-to-day activities, and you might be required to fight fires and to respond to situations, but you can't really put your own point of view in place, and you can't really change anything because this is always going to be a temporary appointment. And so it's something of a frustrating job, I think, for anybody, but nonetheless, you know, a ministerial position comes with the status of a minister of government and potentially the power to sit in the cabinet in case something serious might arise in the intervening period. And of course, you know, the salary and the car and the office and all the status symbols that go along with being a minister in government. So at least from that perspective, you get some benefits. But in terms of really trying to put your point of view across and trying to make a difference to the way that things are being done in Israel, I guess now is not a very good time to be a minister in government.
Unbelievable. Really, really crazy. I actually read a report somewhere that, and maybe it was just rumor, that Sarah Netanyahu pushed for Ayelet Shaked to be completely removed from government. But and of course that kind of thing wouldn't surprise me. But it's certainly a lot going on behind the scenes in terms of the build up towards the next election.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously Ayelet Shaked is seems to be undecided at the moment. There's been a lot of rumor about whether she might join the Likud to compete in the next election and potentially become a member of parliament again, something that she didn't manage to achieve during the last election. But that's just rumor, a counter rumor, and she's been in the news a lot around this whole issue. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Sarah Netanyahu had something to do with it. But at the moment, at least, Ayelet Shaked's future seems uncertain.
Absolutely. That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. It has just gone 8 o'clock. Here's your news headlines, followed by the news with Zanati.